I just wanted to mention, I just put on the Science Channel. For those who have it, they're doing this evening the first in their new series on the physics of light, the Light Fantastic. It sounds like something some of us on this net might be interested in. Other than that, I'll be listening for the rest of the evening. WB2BXL.
Okay, Frank, very good. Yeah, they always have something interesting on the Science Channel. I try to remember, tune in to any of these science programs like PBS will have some excellent NOVA and then the Science Now and programs and all, always something of great interest on it. Thank you for your comments, Frank. And I'll talk to you, catch you around. And, like I say, didn't take a walk today. Everything was late today and got on with Howie. This morning we did get on the Kenny Net and then got involved in other things. So usually I take the walk, the weather's decent, down to the beach and all. I always have the hand unit with me, the talkie. So didn't really get a listen on who's repeater. All right, anybody else have any comments? This is K2KEY and this is TechNet. Okay, well, I got, let's see, one email from, again, about a method of solving for SWR by the quadratic equation method. And for some reason, nobody can find it in any book. And I think possibly that either was my idea, my formula, or something I derived somewhere along what I heard. But they wanted a repeat on the formula, so I'll just give a quick repeat on it. If SWR is equal to B plus the square root of B squared minus 4 over 2, and solve for B initially, it's J squared plus 1 divided by R, as bracketed, plus R. So if you have, for instance, an antenna measurement of, let's say, 40 ohms resistive plus J30 plus 30 ohms inductive, what you do is normalize that. Would be like normalized by 50 ohms in this case, let's say, to 0.8 plus J.6. And by substituting it into the formula to solve for B, and then put it back into the SWR is equal to B plus the square root of B squared minus 4 divided by 2, you would be able to come out, and it should come out with an SWR of 2. That formula is a very straightforward, simple formula of deriving an SWR if you're making antenna measurements, precise antenna measurements, at the antenna and want to know what your SWR is. So, if anybody has any questions about anything like this, I can help them with. I'd be more than glad to. This is K2KEY.
Mel, I have a question, WS2N, not in that regard, though.
Go ahead, Paul.
I thought of this during the middle of the week, but then I forgot about it, and I wanted to ask. My two antennas that I use for HF, one for 80, the one I speak to you on, and then it's 20. I have them laid out one above the other, but they actually cross one another. So looking down, it would look like an X. I show a good SWR and all, so I'm fine with it. But, I mean, would I get out better if I changed all of that, got them completely, far enough away from one another, Mel? Or is it that because they're so different in frequency, one doesn't even know that the other one is there, Dick always said. By the way, Dick, if you listen, I hope you get better. Back to you, Mel.
Now, I guess that most likely would be the case. They most likely don't really have much of interaction with each other, especially if they're in the form of an X. So I don't think you're going to find that if you measured if you were on, say, 80 meters and measured how much energy being absorbed by the second antenna, that you would see, you know, such an amount that would be detrimental. You'd say, oh boy, look at what this is doing, how much it's, you know, taking away from the pattern or in any way changing in any respect my primary antenna. I don't think so. I'll tell you, I have made some experiments with interaction, or I should say phasing and things like that, and on a small scale, by taking the 0.1 wavelength loop that I have, and I made another one up. Actually, I did more of a carpentry work to put these loops together, because they're actually square wooden frames with the wire stretched around the outer periphery. I made one up, the original one up, that's the one that's 12 feet in square. I made another one up 6 feet, and it pivots actually inside of the big one, and it could independently turn and everything inside the original loop. And I noticed, yes, of course, it does work. There's a wave meter if I tune it and get it inside the other one, but they are interactive to the point that they are tuned basically to the same frequency, and I just have a different capacitance shunt it with the resonator. So in that case, yes, if it's precise, I mean, I can see if I have both resonators at the same frequency, I can see the interaction. But you'd be amazed that as soon as I throw one off frequency, you know, tune it to a different frequency and leave the other one set to the previous point, that the interaction decreases quite a bit. So, believe it or not, the antennas are not as interactive as you would think. People always, you know, thought that any kind of object that comes near the antenna is going to have a heck of an effect on it. Worry about, don't go near a tree or, the roof of the house, shingles are going to have a heck of an effect. In fact, I've had antennas even in the attic that I thought, oh boy, if I can move this antenna outside the attic, just get it above the roof, what a difference. The only time I ever saw any real appreciable difference in the antenna is when the roof was really covered with snow, heavy rainstorms are covered with snow, but other than that, unless, you know, it's the effect of electrical cable in the ceilings and all, but to most effect, moving it another foot or two didn't have any, make immense amount of change in the antenna. Paul, over.
Okay. Well, that's good and bad because, well, it's bad because I thought maybe I would be able to get out better if I did something differently. And it's good that I don't have to go out there and do it. You know, they're way up in the trees, way up in the tree limbs. And that's just the way it worked out, you know, when you line things up and you set it all up, you know, the way the trees were sitting. So very good, now we'll leave it alone. And if you get a better signal with snow, I don't know, maybe I'll try that tonight or tomorrow. It looks like it's snowing out now. Out here in Ronkonkoma. Back to you.
Now, some people say that the snow makes it sometimes a better, the antenna works better in snowstorms, ice storms, things like that. this is all, most of the time, just, I guess we could talk ourselves many times into all kinds of situations with antennas and all, and over the years, depends on the propagation. And I remember when conditions were really, super duper some years ago, we had some terrific propagation, and 10 meters was really a hot band. A number of antennas all of a sudden started showing up, these little things, these little wonder antennas that you could hold in your hand, and they were working DX on, which was, like I say, under unusual conditions at the time. They showed some of these little short whips, and sticking it on a a small QRP radio and working the world on it. Yes, I guess to some extent some of these things did work under unusual circumstances, but a rule of thumb is that don't try to, you know, change physics too much. Try to stick with what has been proven mathematically to work, you know, quite well. And the only thing is, of course, I'm trying to disprove a number of things physically with antennas by working with these small 0.1 wavelength loops. And I did a number of experiments this week with really QRP. QRP rig. I put together a small oscillator and hooked it to the loop, and then put it on a scope, looking at the pattern that it developed, both on the scope on the and a spectrum analyzer. And I said we'll discuss that. I discussed that with Dick briefly, and maybe we'll bring up something further with it next week on the tech that hopefully Dick can rejoin us. So, okay, is there anything further to do? Anything else that we could possibly discuss here on the TechNet? This is K2KEY listening. Okay, sounds like we sort of covered most of the subjects tonight. So I'm going to say thank you very much for joining us, all the stations, and have a great weekend, whatever's left of it, and be careful. I guess we're going to have some slippery conditions in the next 24 hours, so be careful if you're driving tomorrow morning. And we'll look forward to doing it again next weekend, next time here, next Sunday on same time on LimeArk. And to all those who send me emails, I appreciate the good comments. And also, there was one letter I got, I must mention, that there is a gentleman by the name of Mike, and his call is, let me get his call exactly, I have it here. HOK, he is KC2NJI. And if you want to go to a website that he has recorded, for the last 10 years, the different conversations that we've had here on LimeArk, the tech sessions, if you go to www.amateurradio.tv, featuring exciting amateur radio projects and the TechNet in streaming audio. You look under TechNet in streaming audio. He has filtered out and cleaned up a lot of it, and you can use that if you want to refer back to a particular conversation here that we've had on the TechNet, a technical conversation. You'll find it there in the audio-based library for fast retrieval. So, with that, thank you very much, everybody, 73s, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week. This is K2KEY, and this is the LimeArk TechNet.